Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.
Naomi Wolf, it's great to have you back on our radio station, particularly at this moment in history. Hey?
Yeah, can you believe it?
Not quite.
It's a moment you and I have discussed many times over the last couple of years, both of us being sure this day would come.
I heard about it in a supermarket car park.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that's the normal day activity gets shattered by this. Can I ask you, what was your initial gut reaction to hearing that that had happened?
So I was in Woodstock, New York, the famed Woodstock, having a little writer's retreat. And my producer, to his credit, called me and told me that President Trump had been shot and that, you know, he was okay, that he was injured. And then, of course, like everyone who's supposed to be a journalist, I absorbed everything I could about the event. And some things seemed very obvious to me as being anomalous, you know, right away. And so I did a podcast about it right away. And I also wrote an essay that I think is an important one on my Substack yesterday called Lady McBiden, because, as you know, I was married to a White House speechwriter who went to all these events. I then advised a presidential campaign, and then I advised vice president. So for a number of years, I was intimately familiar with what it takes to schedule, advance, clear, organize, vet a first lady's event or a president's event or a campaign event in a presidential campaign. And so, like, literally 10 things were horribly wrong from the very beginning, from my experience. And then I interviewed my husband, Brian O'Shea, whom you know, whose background is intelligence and military intelligence and close protection. That's how we met, when I was getting death threats. Close protection meaning being a bodyguard. And 10 things were wrong from his knowledge base. So, you know, even since we had that conversation, any number of commentators have identified a million other things that are wrong. And it's just so clear from the messaging of the SS director Cheadle that she's not even trying to make things sound right. So I can go into my analysis, you know, my best analysis to date, which is in that essay, if you'd like. But that was my preamble.
I would like. Probably this is a question for the end, but it's one of the first ones that came into my head. What would have happened if that bullet had found its target? Where would your country and the rest of us be now?
I mean, God forbid. It wouldn't be America anymore, because given that it seems pretty clear that this administration has murderous intentions, right? Toward their opposition, which is literally the hallmark of the collapse of the rule of law, right? That's the hallmark of a fascist society, a banana republic, a police state. You know, use any pejorative you want. You don't just arrest your opposition, you try to execute your opposition. It wouldn't stop there, of course. It would be immediate state of emergency. People would be in shock, which would help, you know, the bad guys not reacting quickly. And then under the guise of emergency law, there would be a, you know, deployment of all these mysterious security forces into our cities. And judging from history, there would be a roundup, what the Nazis called preventive detention or protective custody. That's it, protective custody, a roundup of other members of the opposition, other critics, other assertive, Congress people and senators, other journalists, such as they are, into the quarantine camps or into some sort of holding cell that some executive order would make possible. And then there would be a confiscation of guns.
Yeah, that's already happened here, by the way, yeah. The confiscation of guns. So it's not a lone wolf sort of lefty gone nuts because he's been brainwashed by who knows who. Is that the tactic? You get someone like that person and you sort of sacrifice them for the operation. Is that how it kind of works? I'm talking about the shooter.
Oh, I don't know. I don't have enough information to understand his role, although, or if that's the guy they say it is, right? It could be anyone. It could be no one. I mean, people really have to understand how much of a narrative like this starts out manufactured, right? We can't possibly know. I mean, especially with social media, all of the video, I wish that citizen journalists would learn, you know, identify your video, citizen journalists, right? I wish there was technology to put a timestamp and a signature on video clips because they float around and, you know, random people are suddenly interviewed by the BBC, which has not been at a Trump rally in the past, to my knowledge, you know, or rarely. And then that person says, I saw X, and no one knows who that person is. No one's vetted that person. No one knows where the video comes from. It's not identified, you know, when, where, who, nothing. And then everyone sees it and says, oh, I see what happened. And it's so easy to put together a narrative if you're the people manufacturing consensus. So, you know, all of that is preamble to say, I literally don't know who shot President Trump. But I do know, and this is what I did write about in my essay, which I really hope I don't get arrested for. I do know that it is literally impossible for events to unfold in terms of the Secret Service's involvement the way that they are claiming. For example, one of the things I pointed out in my essay from having, you know, been around meetings of, you know, daily meeting. There's a daily meeting for the campaign. There's a daily meeting for the chief of staff of the team in the White House. And there's a process that is ironclad for putting an event on the schedule of the first lady or the president or a campaigner running for presidency. And you can't deviate from it. And one of the things that is part of the standard operating procedure is that the advance team, this is why they're called an advance team, goes to the venue in advance, right? That's what their job is. That's their only job. And their job is to surface any problems with the venue in advance. So the huge vulnerability of a, you know, roof overlooking at 130 meters, the speaker would have been surfaced by that forward advance trip. The other thing that is absolutely categorically the case, at least as of 24 years ago, when, you know, I was around all these people, things may have changed, but if they've changed, it's because someone wants a lower level of protection for these principals, right? The first lady, the president, or a President Trump. But at that time, literally no one could finalize an event on the schedule if the Secret Service said it wasn't safe. And you just couldn't. You know, POTUS couldn't overrule them. FLOTUS couldn't overrule them. First Lady of the United States. You know, you can't overrule the Secret Service. And the Secret Service would have gone in advance. They have to create a dedicated custom security plan for every venue. And, you know, the architectural plans, the maps are sent to the Secret Service and the advance team and the chief of staff in advance of anything even being put on the schedule. And so all of this kind of, oh my God, we don't really know what happened from the Secret Service is literally impossible. They know exactly what happened because they cleared that event in advance. And I really hope they don't take me out. And then, you know, many other anomalies, like, no, seriously, like, they were saying as of yesterday or this morning that the local police were responsible for securing that rooftop. Never happens. It just never happens. That's not, you know, the Secret Service doesn't collab. It's not a collab, you know, with the local police, like in officers collaborating. They don't collaborate. They're the Secret Service. It's their job to secure the perimeter, to make sure that there's no one in the parking lot, you know, of that building, that the ingress and egress is secure, that the roof is secure, you know, that there's not a missing third counter sniper team, which according to my husband, there was, and other security guys have said there's a missing third team, that there's a kind of a fan of vulnerability, you know, of that circle around the speaker. So many anomalies. And then, you know, getting into the actual reaction of the Secret Service to the shooting. You compare that video to the video of the Secret Service responding in 1989 to John Hinckley shooting President Reagan. And it's like night and day. I mean, they everyone knew exactly what to do. They got him out of harm's way in seconds. And of course, that's not what you saw. Like everybody knows by now that there was a teeny tiny lady Secret Service person in front of President Trump, right? Leaving his head completely exposed.
Is she the one who said, what do we do?
What do we do? I don't know who said that, but again, because the Secret Service would have a signed off security plan, no one says, what do we do? Because everyone knows exactly what is supposed to happen for that particular venue. So there's, I guess what worries me more is not noticing the nonsensical justifications of the Secret Service and the director of the Secret Service, but noticing that they don't care anymore how nonsensical they sound, that that seems to be the messaging, which is very intimidating, right? Which is like, nobody's safe.
You sounded sort of genuinely afraid just before, actually, when you said, I hope they don't take me out, you know, has it got to that? You're really feeling that way.
I mean, you know, good morning.
No, like, I know, but, you know.
He tried to kill the president. I mean,
yeah.
Of course I'm afraid. And I'm afraid because, I mean, thank God I live with my bodyguard, right? And, you know, but it's an unbelievably scary time. I mean, you know, President Trump was surrounded by bodyguards. Like, how can I put it? Here's what I see. It goes a little further than me just being afraid, although I try not to show fear. The messaging from the Secret Service, it is designed to lead people like me and you and members of Congress and members of the Senate to feel afraid. And that's exactly what Mussolini did. He messaged intimidating messages with his black shirts beating up opposition leaders. And then, like, the parliament got it, you know, and they caved even before he was formally in power. So what I see happening is that the Secret Service is pretty much saying to America, yeah, we can, you know, we can take out the president. We can take out you. We can take out Tucker Carlson. We can take out, you know, Elon Musk. I mean, that's what I'm seeing, because the things they're saying, Secret Service doesn't say, right? Like, literally, they're not supposed to shed responsibility. They're not supposed to minimize. They're not even supposed to be speaking to the press, right? There should just be like one statement and that's it, not a kind of PR, you know, scampering around by the director of the Secret Service. So it's very scary. So what that says to me is that she has the blessing of one faction, and I'll get to that in a minute, in the White House to be as scary as they want her to be, you know, because that's their last play.
So the mask has come off. Some kind of mask has come off now.
Yeah, you could certainly say that. Yes, certainly. But it's not reassuring what is behind the mask, because it's like the mafia.
Yeah, who is behind the mask, actually?
Well, now that gets interesting. Do you mind if I sketch out my...
Yeah, I want you to.
Okay, I will. Thank you. It's not good. So what I see, again, based on my experience as a consultant on a campaign like this, is, and a White House spouse, which is important, is former White House spouse, is that there's a fight, you know, like a civil war in the White House. And I wrote this piece 48 hours ago. And since the New York Times, interestingly to me, has, and other legacy media have, you know, run stories confirming that there is a civil war in the White House, exactly as I had predicted. And the civil war is this demented president, of course, can't do anything. He's, you know, incapacitated. But the holdouts are Jill Biden and Hunter Biden. And they're the ones who need to kill or be killed, essentially, you know, metaphorically. They're the ones who will be investigated, imprisoned, or, you know, God knows what, if there is a successful Trump presidency. So you really have to know the day-to-day of a White House to understand how serious Jill Biden's role is, because, you know, everyone saw at the debate what we've known for a couple of years, that President Biden is impaired cognitively. So who's making the 1,000 decisions that a president makes every day, right? It's probably Jill Biden. You know, it's probably not the chief of staff, because this is someone who can't decide what to sign, right? But you see him in public. Jill Biden says, turn here. Jill Biden says, shake this person's hand. Jill Biden says, don't wander off over there. You know, go in that direction. And he does. So it's, we probably have an Edith Wilson type scenario in which in 1919, President Wilson suffered a stroke, and for 2 years, his wife covered it up and basically ran the United States. So probably every decision coming out of the White House, I imagine there's a fight between Jeff Zients, the chief of staff, and Mrs. Biden. But Mrs. Biden, you know, is probably overruling Jeff Zients, okay? And she may have power of attorney, you know, for her husband. We don't know, right? She may be legally her husband at this point. So that being said, what's clear is that there, from all the leaking and the, you know, the times you see President Biden put in front of legacy media that embarrass him and display his cognitive impairment, which couldn't be done without his own staff arranging it, right? That wouldn't happen without his own staff arranging it. What has happened is that donors and Democratic donors and the DNC and Democratic lawmakers are relentlessly badgering the chief of staff to get rid of Biden, right? And to pressure Biden to gracefully step aside. And they're pressuring Mrs. Biden. They're pressuring Biden to the extent that he can process any of it. And Mrs. Biden isn't letting him step aside, right? This is clear. So you get this leaking, more and more, you know, embarrassing of President Biden. This is all being done by Democrats, right? It's not the opposition. Democrats are doing it to get rid of him so that they can have a chance at winning in the fall. So in this civil war, Mrs. Biden, as I mentioned, will do anything to not go to jail or not be investigated. So who's, I'm almost done, whose Secret Service director choice is Director Cheadle? It's Jill Biden's. Where was Jill Biden at 5 o'clock, you know, which is when President Trump's event started in Butler, PA? She was 54 minutes away in North Pittsburgh, PA, at a closed event with 200 people, but she needed all the Secret Service. And Kamala Harris was at an event also in Pennsylvania, in Philadelphia, and she needed all the Secret Service. So Mrs. Biden, I think, is not bright, and power can also become distorting and addictive. I can imagine her thinking, well, I'll just draw off all of the tall, experienced Secret Service men to these two events and, you know, give a hint, because it's never overt, right? It's, she didn't say, go make sure there's a successful hit on President Trump. But she absolutely, without spelling it out, could create a condition in which President Trump is vulnerable to an attack. And she's frenzied enough, I think, to, or desperate enough to be willing to try to do that. So that's my analysis of what happened. And it's very dangerous, you know, the situation, very dangerous, because you know who's next? I mean, God forbid, I hope I'm wrong. The next person who's in danger is President Biden.
Yeah. That's incredible, though not surprising, and especially the way you've laid it out. It's amazing to think that someone could ramp it to that level for self-protection and put a country, an entire country at risk. It's amazing.
I mean, but they've been putting a country at risk for the last 3 years. They have no you know, hesitation about that. The rest of it is extraordinary, but if you've seen, like, if you've been in these inner circles, that level of power makes people crazy. You know, the most balanced person is tempted to do more and more irrational things. The most sane, grounded person becomes unbalanced. It's a vortex. And then imagine the vortex being, I'm going to go to jail. We don't know what she did. You know, we don't know what the records will show when another administration takes over that White House. Well, she could have committed, you know, crimes or been bribed and so on and so on. And
what about Hunter? What about Hunter?
Well, again, throw that in, right? He's a drug addict and a sex addict. So he, and I've seen these situations, right? When the, not talk about anyone specific, the principal, right, the president or the vice president, is so paranoid for good reason, because people are trying to exploit, manipulate, you know, if not worse, those people. Ultimately, the only people they trust are like their family. And then the family can become a psychotic influence on the situation, especially if they're mentally ill to start out with, which is, you know, we know that Hunter is, and a huge risk taker and a lunatic, right? So you've got a drug addict who thinks he should record himself having sex with, you know, Russian hookers, right? Or whatever craziness he did, or take massive bribe money from Chinese assets or all the things he did. He is advising Mrs. Biden. Mrs. Biden has no one to turn to or trust except Hunter and someone who's cognitively impaired. And in that hothouse environment, you could see incredibly lethal, unhinged decision-making, which is what we saw.
Why doesn't someone blow the whistle from within?
I mean, who would want to do that?
Well, look what's at stake.
I think it's dangerous to blow the whistle. I mean, you know, the director has pretty much said, we will take people off the chessboard by force. You know, why would you think they wouldn't take you off the chessboard if you blow the whistle? What I'm surprised about is that there isn't more leaking, but I think this is such a heightened, freaky environment that people are scared even to leak because it could get traced back to them.
How wider does it go? I was captured by something that Mike Benn said, and he made the point that after that debate, that there was no sort of signed off mass signature letter from the intel community, maybe suggesting that Biden should step down at this point, that they were quiet. And he said that was an ominous silence. And
I don't really think it's the job of the intel community to say that a president is impaired. It's the job of Congress.
Well, they came out and they put Hunter's laptop to bed in that way, you know, so they've done it before.
Right. I don't know. Who said that it was surprising? Mike Benz?
Mike Benz, who we've had.
If they did come out and think that that was their job, I think our country would be in even worse shape than it is, because that's not their job.
I think he was suggesting that their silence on that implied something else, you know, that.
What did it imply in his
view? That they were happy to have this bumbling man in place still.
Well, someone's happy to have this bumbling man in place still. I know from sources that lobbyists are happy, very happy with the situation, because whether you're on the left or the right, they say that he'll sign whatever you put in front of him. So you can imagine the vultures picking at the corpse, essentially. And China is probably really happy to have a disabled puppet. Our enemies are thrilled. Look at how weak we are. And you've got to ask, you know, I think we've talked about this, that in the middle of the lockdowns, I asked, you know, the Australian Parliament disbanded. I said, who's running Australia? And there were like 150,000 responses. And it turned out that there was a coup in Australia, as far as I'm concerned, at that time. And so
similar here, by the way, we had the same thing. The parliament was shut down. Really? Oh, it was God. A sort of kind of like this weird Zoom thing that they did. And only five, I think it was a group of five parliamentarians were running the show, including Jacinda Ardern at the top, of course.
Yeah, well, that's a coup. That's called a coup. It's not supposed to work like that. It's interesting. They proposed five guys to run New York State, you know, including Bloomberg and Bill Gates and so on. And that was rejected, but they floated it. So I think that was a model they were rolling out or trying to roll out around the world. Well, that being said, you know, look at us now, right? No one knows who's running the country. No one knows who's running the country. I can't say that enough, which means
I get it. Yeah.
You know, Russia could send a nuke. China could invade Taiwan. You know, who's going to react? Jill Biden, Hunter, right? Like,
yeah, Hunter.
We're in a state of complete, we're prostrate. We're helpless and our enemies know it. So yeah, they're thrilled. Why not let it carry on? And that's also why Democrats are so angry and donors are so angry, because they recognize our vulnerability, and some of them, you know, really care about our country, and they're very furious. I'm inferring, knowing, you know, the behavior of Democratic donors, I'm inferring that many of them are furious that the Bidens are putting the country in such a vulnerable position.
Well, Hunter could be being blackmailed right now, couldn't he?
Yeah. I mean, Mrs. Biden could be being blackmailed.
Well, all of them.
She's been up to, you know, she's a vibrant woman who's much younger than President Biden. We don't know who she's been, you know, we don't know anything about her private life, but like literally we don't know. It's a very Shakespearean situation right now.
I'm just looking at the Washington Post. Obama tells allies Biden's path to winning re-election is greatly diminished. It's a very significant thing, isn't it, for him to say that, Obama?
Well, people really need to understand the role of leaking. The fact that Obama said that or had it be reported is not an accident. It is categorically, they're cutting this guy off and his family and putting them on an ice floe and sending them all out into the outer darkness. It is a lot like Mussolini's takeover of the parliament, because people kept the parliamentarians in Mussolini's Italy kept legislating even after he'd already taken over and there were black shirts standing in parliament. So there's like this hangover moment, right? And the Bidens don't realize they're already, I don't want this to be misconstrued, it's not a threat, they're already politically dead and they don't understand that.
Okay, so what happens now?
I don't want to say what I think is going to happen. I think God forbid, all right, God forbid, I hope I'm wrong. Last I checked the news, the announcement was that President Biden was ill with COVID. I think he will decline and his health will allow him gracefully to exit and say, I'm going home to recover. And as a result, I'm going to, you know, yield to Vice President Harris. Or God forbid, he will decline and you know, may I be wrong. Right. Yeah. It's one of two options. I don't think I think there's like a 4% chance that there's no chance that he can get everyone to back him again and that he can pick up and resume his role. I don't see any way that that happens.
Does that eliminate the bigger problem, though? Take him off and Jill and Hunter kind of exit, but
right.
It's bigger than that, though, isn't it? There's a whole sort of apparatus that goes with that.
I'm not sure what you mean.
Well, there's the media. There are, you know, the letter agencies.
Right.
There's the overhang of all the sort of, the you know, DEI and all of that sort of stuff. I just wonder if that, if it's a bigger problem than just, you know, three or four or five actors, main actors in this.
Bigger problem. I mean, the fact that our, you know, government has been taken over by an unknown, you know, hostile force is a bigger problem. They'll still be there, and they'll probably still be there with a Harris, you know, leadership. I don't know if, like, who would become Harris's vice president. I would need to check the Constitution or the, you know, rules of succession. I don't remember. I think Speaker of the House, but I'm not sure.
I think
the malevolent force would be much weakened. You know, if he steps aside, and I don't know. I mean, this is why I say there's a civil war. I don't think the malevolent force has Schumer in the same way, for instance, or Pelosi, right? I don't think they have in the same way the people who are trying to get rid of Biden from the Democratic side. Other people have them, right? But I don't think China has Schumer in the same way China has the Bidens, for example. So that fight is going to continue to play out. You know, you might see Harris being forced out, you know, or her dirty laundry leaked, or some claim that she's a drug addict, or, you know, whatever. I don't know. I can't tell right now, with President Biden gone, what the game plan is for the DNC. I think they'd love to get to Gavin Newsom, right, as a candidate, but I don't know how they think they can get rid of, you know, the others standing in their way. But there's, when you said what happens next, there's, I think something really interesting is happening right now, which makes all of this kind of moot, which is what I see, and I, you know, also would love to be wrong about this, is that the globalist power center has decided there's no way around President Trump and his victory, and that they're going to align with him and kind of swallow him up. And so that's why in the United States, you're seeing a shift in the media. It's much more positive. You're seeing a lot of tech bros getting behind him. You've got his VP, who's a protege of Peter Thiel's, J.D. Vance. You've got a lot of, you know, Palantir is now aligned with President Trump's team. So you're seeing big, heavy hitting globalist interests kind of going, okay, fine, you know, but when they go, okay, fine, they swallow a candidate, you know, they don't just step out of the way. And so that's what I'm seeing. And in a way, that's scarier, because it means there will be no opposition, right? The fight will be within the White House to see if, you know, they completely win, or if there's some kind of MAGA independence that can survive.
There's no way anyone can beat Trump now anyway. Really, is there? That's it. It's done.
I don't know. I mean, it all depends on the machines, right? They could, you know, elect a
machine. Yeah.
Right. I mean, not enough has been done to pass our wonderful election integrity bill, which is on the upper right-hand page of Daily Clout. But we need paper ballots. We need same-day voting. We need voter ID. And it's interesting that President Trump is talking about that. That's big. And we helped a lot to make that happen. But they can, you know, they can elect whoever they want. I mean, look at Britain. You know, I haven't even written this essay yet, but in 2014, there was a Scottish referendum. And we at Daily Clout were getting so many eyewitness accounts, named, identified accounts of blank ballots. that in counties that would vote yes to secession from Britain, to independence. And then I followed up and, you know, people said, oh, we were told to go to the local council. So I went to the local councils and the local council said, oh, go to the police. So I went to the police and the police said, go to the election committee. And I went to the election committee, which is actually, you know, works for the British government, which the referendum was about leaving, right? Mm-hmm. And they said, oh, no, go to the local council. So it was a 360 degree circle of deniability about any oversight of election anomalies. So when the vote was counted, we have a spreadsheet of 400 named identified blank ballots, which are just a fraction probably of the blank ballots in the yes counties. And the tally was no, you know, so I have become thoroughly convinced that Britain doesn't have any accurate vote counting at all. And no one in Britain knows what to do when, and there's nothing to be done when their vote is not properly counted. Why do we think Labour won the election? We have no idea if Labour won the election. There's zero oversight of the British vote.
That, we'll wind up in just a moment. That phone call that I watched, and many people watched a clip of him with Bobby Kennedy Jr., and he actually mentioned vaccines in it, which I thought was interesting. Presumably you're aware of that. Yeah. What do you make of that?
Oh, politics. Okay, so at that level, nothing gets released without mutual consent. And so this was a very clever way for, you know, President Trump is getting a lot of pressure from his base to disavow the vaccines. Well, he can't really do that for a lot of reasons. He needs pharma money. He needs, he already did it. So if, you know, legally, if he says, oh, this was bad, he could be liable, right, in lawsuits. He can't address that. Politically, he can't go back and say those vaccines were a bad idea. What he can do is what he just did, which is satisfy the, you know, lust for acknowledgement of the vaccine, the anti-vax part of his base by leaking that, you know, completely vanilla criticism of vaccines. And it doesn't hurt anyone. It does suggest to me that RFK Jr. is going to have a prominent place in his administration because they worked together to release that, I believe.
And I mean, I got to say, and I'm way over here, what do I know? But I'm still hung up on that Operation Warp Speed when it comes to his, Trump's credibility. Can't quite get by it totally.
Yeah, I don't, you know, having been a White House spouse, I don't, you know, my then husband was a special advisor to President Clinton, special assistant is what it's called. And I forgot the exact title. But it's the same title that Fauci has, right? Their job is to advise the president. And the reason I bring this up is the president has many special advisors around him or her eventually. And, you know, the special advisor on economic policy, the president can't know everything about economics. The special advisor on infrastructure, president can't know how bridges are built. The special advisor, especially science and medicine, if you're not a doctor or scientist and you're a president, you have to take the recommendation of your special advisors. And, you know, I don't blame him at all. Pfizer lied, the FDA lied. He had no way of knowing that they weren't telling him the truth when they, you know, scientists said, we vetted this, it's safe and effective. You can't run a country unless you, at a certain point, you know, trust and act on the guidance of these experts whose job is to advise you. I give him a giant pass for that. It's okay. Unfortunate. It'd be great if he could acknowledge it, but I understand from having been if I were advising him right now, I would say, you know, for him to do exactly what he did, not to address it directly, but to address it in a future-oriented way indirectly.
Okay, well, it's been really interesting speaking with you again.
Thank you.
And any anywhere that you'd like to point our listeners to? I've watched the interview. In fact, you and your husband talking, that was interesting, and hearing what he had to say. That's available. And anywhere else that you would suggest?
Yes. So that is on Outspoken on Substack and on Daily Clout. But it's very important if people care about my work over the last 2.5 years in terms of letting people know what the dangers are of this vaccine, please pre-order the Pfizer Papers, which is the book that Skyhorse is bringing out in September of the reports that our volunteers produced based on the Pfizer Papers. And it has all the headlines, all the dangers, all the risks. You can save your family's lives with it. You can give it to people who are not vaccine hesitant enough. You can give it to your doctor, but it's very, very, very important to pre-order it because that signals to bookstores that they should stock it.
Thank you again, Naomi Wolf, for coming on our radio station, and good luck. Thank and you've you. Got good, you've got great protection, right? So we know that.
Yes, that is fortunate. Yes. Take care.
Thanks for tuning in to RCR, Reality Check Radio. Do you like what you're listening to or dislike what you're listening to? Either way, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us now. You can text us with your message to 2057. That's 2057. Or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. We'd love to hear from you. So connect with us today.